You are listening to the Punk Dude. Sorry. I don't know what the fuck happened there. Oh,
leave
God.
It in. Leave it in.
We're just going to leave that in? Let's just leave that in. This is 341. This is episode 341 of the Punk News Podcast. Hi, this is Adam White. This is the Punk News Podcast. Joining me on tonight's show, Mr. John Gentile.
I'm here. I'm ready to rock. I'm back like Dr. Spock in Star Trek 4.
Was he back in 4 or was he not back in 3?
I guess it was 3. What was the quest for Spock? Was that 3?
3, it was the search for Spock.
I don't know, I'm really more of a Next Generation guy. I like Next Generation way better than original series. Captain Picard.
Should we just talk? Oh, man, can this become one of those Star Trek podcasts?
Yeah, let's just talk about Star Trek Next Generation. I got to say, I recently had the realization that I might not even like Star Trek. I think I like Star Trek The Next Generation, but I don't like Star Trek in general because I don't like the original series. I'm annoyed by Deep Space Nine. I can't stand Voyager. I never saw the Scott Bakula one, and I thought the reboots were okay.
You see, I was like that the right age for Next Gen when it came out, so I was really into that. And I remember being into Deep Space Nine a lot, but I was a huge nerd, so that was the kind of thing.
I hate all the characters on DS9. I like all the characters on Next Generation. Everyone on DS9 annoys me. Even Worf annoys me, and I think Worf is cool. The only cool guy on DS9 is Colm Meaney. What's his name? O'Brien.
Yeah, and then what else? So, like, Voyager I thought was dumb, and I was kind of getting too old at that point, so I just wrote it off. And I never saw Enterprise until right now, in which I am watching it on Netflix.
Is it cool or does it suck?
It has this weird, incredibly off-putting, kind of like AOR rock intro.
AOR? What's that?
Like album-oriented rock. What I'm reading is, like, I don't know, like Don Henley or in the I don't really know, right? Like it's so bad. It's like, or maybe it's maybe a little bit of like a country rock song. It's so bad. Ugh. It's like a ballad instead of like instead of all this like operatic Star Trek music, they have a dumb intro song. So I remember,
are you ready for some football?
No, it's way worse than that because it's weak even as one of those songs. So so there's this horrible song that's the intro, and it makes you just want to die. So then by the time the show starts, you're in a horrible, horrible disposition. So if you use the skip button there in Netflix to jump ahead every time religiously when the theme comes on, then you're fine. I don't know if I've sat through it once in its entirety. Like, it's super bad.
Am I on the wrong Ricky podcast? Am I a Nerdist too. Or something? Or Earwolf?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't listen to any of these geek podcasts. I should.
Yeah, we're not nerds or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On our fucking podcast. So, all right. So this is the Punk News Podcast. Thanks for being here, folks. This is the New Classic crew that is with you again. John, is there any mail before we get to all of the stuff that happened this week?
Indeed, there is. There is always mail at Punk News, and I am pulling it up now. I thought I had it pulled up, but I'm pulling it up right now. Here is the mail that you, the readers, have recently sent to us. Let me reach into the bag and pull it out. This is from...
Have you actually got one, or are you going to continue to vamp for the next 10 minutes?
This is from Jeff. Hi, my name is Jeff. My question is more of an observation, I guess. How much do you think the scene of skateboarding influenced punk rock or vice versa? Countless punk bands, old and new, are known to support the skate scene or even skate themselves. Most currently, Mike Vallely, being the current singer of Black Flag. I definitely feel both scenes existed and thrived because of each other. Thrasher Magazine, the Tony Hawk video games, even the X Games all correlate to music, specifically punk rock. So again, no real question, just curious to hear some opinions from Jeff.
Wasn't like the meeting of those two subjects, like, wasn't that like Thrasher Magazine? Like, I feel like there's skate, like, I vaguely remember that being a thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, punk rock is definitely linked to skating, as they call it. Thrasher is probably the first that cemented those two in written form, if you will. I think the connection goes a little bit older than that, because the DC punks, which are before Thrasher magazine, used to skateboard a lot.
I know, like Redondo Beach bands here. I know the skating and surfing was big, like Black Flag and Descendants.
The joke none of those guys were skaters in Black Flag.
Right, but skaters like their music, right? And like, or am I getting that wrong? Well, weren't those videos also the skating videos? The soundtracks were like The Offspring and in the 90s and Pennywise and NoFX or whatever.
Yeah,
like, I think that was part of it too.
I don't think the question is are they connected. I think the question is why do we think they're connected? And there's always an interesting thing in that punk rock is kind of about individuality, thinking for yourself, and not being a jock. And from a certain perspective, skateboarding is definitely not thinking for yourself, and it definitely is about being a jock. Or is it? And I think that contrast was born pretty much when those two cultures merged in California, at least. And I think that conflict or that issue has always been there, and there's really no solution to it. It's just that punk rock has no one definition, and that's why you have that conflict, if you will.
They also came into, like, skating and punk rock also sort of came into, I guess, the mainstream's eye around the same time, too. I mean, the X Games were not a thing in the 80s, but they grew, I'd say, with the Tony, I'd say both of them grew in the 90s and late, and then the early 2000s.
But the skateboarding punk connection goes back to about 83, 84 with Thrasher.
Right, but I'm just saying they've been connected
since then, yeah, for sure.
Since then, and have grown in the public's eye together.
True.
I like that. We could just listen to this letter and then just respond like, "Yep," and then keep going. I'm not mad. That is right. There is a connection there. When I was I don't know how old I would have been, in like 95, 96. I remember that people passing around VHS cassettes with like those skate videos on it that had exactly what you said, NoFX and things like that on it, were just personally for me a huge entry point into punk rock, was seeing those things on skateboarding videos and on snowboarding videos a lot of the time. So
hey, what's the purpose of skateboarding videos? Like, is it to see like how, like why this, like a certain guy is really good at doing tricks? Or is it like an instruction? I don't understand the concept of skateboarding or surfing videos. What's the purpose of them?
I've actually never really figured that out.
I mean, I can guess. I mean, a lot of it, I think originally, wasn't it to show like what new tricks like the pros are doing now to kids?
I think that like partly it was a pre-YouTube type of thing. Yeah, like that could too. Never exist in today's universe, because I remember that we used to always have like snowboarding videos that were going around, and you'd sit down and you'd watch people doing all these crazy jumps off of mountain ledges and things like that. And like, for no other reason than just to like sit around with your dumb high school friends and go like, "Whoa, look at that." Right. Like there was no, there certainly wasn't a plot. Most of them were usually in just music, and there was no, other audio of any kind in them. So it's not like they were like necessarily instructional or anything. It's like here's how you leap over a fucking ledge. So they were just, things you'd watch as a dumb teenager. And I imagine that just that teenagers that would be so inclined to get into that kind of thing would just do so on YouTube at this point.
Well, that was from Jeff, and this is from Bjarte, who I believe he lives in like Sweden or somewhere.
Is he from Serbia?
No, I don't think so. He's from Hogskolan. Somebody look up where Hogskolan is. Anyways, this is from Bjarte. You guys are on crack. Can't wait for the new Black Flag special. Cheers from Norway. That answers that.
Oh, okay, never mind. I had someone confused.
Bjarte, thank you for writing in. We appreciate that. And
are we on crack in regards to what?
I think just, are we on crack in general?
Oh, all right.
No,
I'm not. I can't vouch for the other two, though.
I edited the letter. He says, your latest episode was on crack.
Oh.
Please post a new version. Oh. So.
Oh,
it was.
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently the episode prior to this one was released for several hours with some wonky ghost audio happening in it, which is really all Tom Trauma's fault.
The weird part is like it was like the audio was out. Well, not the weird part, but the interesting part is the audio was out of sync. So just randomly, like Tom Trauma would giggle, and I found it really disconcerting. Like Adam, just start talking about like the latest record that you bought. Go ahead.
So I got the new Dream Car record. Yeah,
it was really unnerving. You know what I mean?
It looks like it's back up.
I guess that shows what a snowflake I am, that I get shooken up by someone randomly laughing for no reason.
Yeah. So anyways, doing things is hard. That's my answer to that. So yeah, that episode was hopefully fixed.
So anyway, you can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. We love getting your letters and we actually let us know if there's something wrong too, because we'd like to fix it. But also, I certainly appreciate that we have such a dedicated audience, that they let us know when it's not working instead of just saying, oh, well, Punk News Podcast isn't working. Oh, well, I don't care. They care, Adam. They care.
If we released an episode that was just complete static and no one said anything to us, that's probably the point where you should quit. Right? Like we're just screaming into the void.
Well, listen, speaking of people quitting things, this past weekend, I guess, was it last weekend? It was last weekend I saw Anvil. Adam, like, can you tell the Punk News Podcast audience about Anvil?
I am not an Anvil scholar, John. What should I tell them about Anvil?
Okay, well I didn't even, I mean, I didn't know about Anvil until it seems like fairly recently Propagandhi, like, said, oh, we're huge Anvil fans. We've always been Anvil fans. And that's how I knew of them. And I'm not even a Propagandhi fan. But I know the reason I went to the concert. Anvil is kind of like the great Canadian never was. They formed, I think, in like 79 or 80, and they're a heavy metal band, much in the classic heavy metal 80s style. So they sound a lot like Iron Maiden, actually. A little bit of Judas Priest, but a lot like Iron Maiden. Or if you really want to be specific, they sound a lot like Riot, to tell you the truth. But if you don't know Riot, they sound like Iron Maiden a lot. And so they were playing in Philadelphia, and I said, "Oh, you know, I'll go." And Anvil is interesting because they never made it. They're definitely working guys with the band, so they have somewhat of an audience, but they're certainly not huge, and they're certainly not rich. And I guess Propagandhi respects them because they never had a hiatus. They kept trucking along now for what, 37 years, and they're still doing their thing. Even though it's kind of a little bit cheesy metal, I guess that's why the Propagandhi guys like it, because they rock. I mean, Adam, are you familiar with Anvil at all or not at all?
I mean, I'm familiar with them as in, like, you know, older kids than me. You would see people with shirts and things like that from time to time. I mean, like, they had a little bit of that, you know, Canadian home team thing happening, but, you know, before my time and out of my genre. So yeah.
Would you say my characterization was correct or mostly correct?
Oh, from my understanding, yes.
So anyways, I saw Anvil in Philadelphia, and man, I haven't been to a heavy metal concert for a while. I used to go to them all the time in the 90s, because I would go see Judas Priest, I'd go see Slayer, I'd go see Gwar, I'd go see Black Sabbath, I'd go see Iron Maiden, I'd go see all those bands, so I would see a lot of heavy metal bands. But now you'll mostly see punk or rock or hip-hop or reggae, not a whole lot of heavy metal. And it was a real thrill to see Anvil playing at the level of Iron Maiden, if you will. I actually like Judas Priest a lot better than Iron Maiden, but Iron Maiden is a very technical band, I guess, if you will. But Anvil was playing with that level of impact and skill, so a little wilder, a little crazier than Iron Maiden. But when you go see Iron Maiden, it's in a huge, you know, 20, 40, 60,000 person capacity arena or whatever. But this was in like a 200 person club. So it was really cool to see a band of that caliber playing in such a tiny place. And frankly, it was like, I don't even be like ironic, like, oh, it was heavy metal. Like it rocked. It was like really, really awesome. It was just awesome, classic heavy metal, and I loved it. And people were having a great time, and I was surprised. The lead singer is a guy, oh, I forgot the guy's name. His first name is Lips, but that's not his, oh, Lips Kudlow. That's the main guy. Lips Kudlow is Anvil, basically. And he comes out and it's like, hey guys, thanks for coming out. We really appreciate it. We've been doing this for 30 years. And I was like, wow, this guy's so polite. Cause like, you know, I'm used to seeing like Slayer where Kerry King's like, you motherfuckers, we're going to shove this metal up your ass, motherfuckers. And he goes, mother effer, every other word. And this guy's so much more friendlier than like Kerry King of Slayer. I'm like, whoa. I'm like, wow, Canadians are so friendly and so nice. And then so they're rocking along, and then about halfway through the concert, he pulls out a metal vibrator and does like a 10-minute guitar solo with the metal vibrator, which I thought was amusing. I thought that was PG-13 rated fun, right? But then he starts like sniffing it, and I was like, "Oh man, that's kind of crossing the line." And then after the solo is over, he says, "You know," he goes, "I'm always getting stuff caught in my teeth." And like the audience kind of like looks at each other like, what is he talking about? And he says, I'm always getting stuff caught in my teeth. And the people are like, what is he talking about? And then he goes, you know me, I love sucking pussy. And I was like, oh Jesus. I'm like, that's crossing the line, man. Like, that's kind of pervy. Like I don't know what it, like, that Red is really pervy to me. Like, he just like announced that, like, out of the blue. Like I don't know why. Maybe it was because if Kerry King said, I love banging chicks, I'm like, ah, it's Kerry King. But he was like so polite, and then he said something like so specific and like I guess because like not even one specific one. Like in general, that's what he likes to do. It just seems really pervy to me. Adam, wait, is that good, clean fun, or is that kind of pervy?
That seems kind of pervy, John. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Like, the whole audience was like taken aback. Like, it's pretty hard to
well, like, shock an audience. Were they taken aback? Because I'm curious about that. Because I feel that you could get on stage and say something like that in a metal show, and it might be like people aren't going to try to destroy you from like a social justice standpoint, like they would if you did that at a punk show.
But I actually bring up a good question though. If it depending on how deep you want to dive into this, but if like Pantera got up, so I love this stuff, like no one would even give a shit at all.
That's what I'm wondering. Like,
you know?
So
I don't even know how to send that. How that would be offensive at any anywhere? To be honest, he's just being enthusiastic.
I mean, he's being sex positive, if you will. Like, it's, but like it was just so perfect. Like what I'm saying is it was perfect to me that he liked it. He likes to suck pussy. Like he's not like he used that word, but he's like just pussy in general. And I don't mean to be too crass here, listeners, but like any general pussy, he just likes to suck it. Like of all the sexual acts to like focus on that one and describe it that way, it just seemed perfect to me. And I don't mean to diss Animal because they were awesome.
You know what that is in the Trailer Park Boys parlance. Oh, I want to say that's pretty greasy, John. That's a pretty greasy thing to get up on stage and say.
that is the perfect word. Greasy, as Bubbles would say.
Well, listen, Anvil is great. You should go see, well, like, if you like heavy metal, you should go see Anvil live.
Here's the thing. I'm, like, not that surprised by that at all, because I've never seen them. I've listened to them a little bit, but if you see, like, their old shows in their documentary that arguably made their careers a lot more prevalent, made them a lot more prevalent.
Well, he said that on stage. Like it's true.
Yeah, he did. No, he does. He that's not uncommon for their shows, I don't think.
Maybe I don't know enough about Anvil. Maybe that's my problem.
Watch the documentary. It's actually pretty funny. It's like I think it got compared to Spinal Tap.
Well, maybe I need to learn more about Anvil. Anyway, if you get a chance to see Anvil a lot, if you like heavy metal or even just like rocking shows, you should go see Anvil because they definitely rock. This is off their latest album. It's about pirates. It's called Daggers and Rum.
Keel hauls undead, walk the plank, fall in the sea. Treasure by sword or gun with an iron fist. We are led by the captain's word, or we be dead. When the crow's nest men tell ships ahoy, we load the cannon with balls to deploy. Slit their throat or run them through. Take what we want and kill their crew. Aboard their ship we take control. Throw their captain in the hole. Bury the treasure and get away. Just another pirate's day.
That was about pirates.
Oh, this show. Oh my god.
The show is just I don't know what's happening.
Adam, I love pirates. I love Star Trek The Next Generation.
We went from Star Trek to Anvil.
Well,
quite the jump.
I mean, that was the plan. Okay, so let's talk about the first story that we want to touch on this week. And this one's had a bunch of developments, I think, since our initial post, so I don't know how necessarily relevant this is at the moment, but there is a gentleman by the name of Felix Walworth. He was from the band Told Slant, and he tweeted out a screenshot of a portion of this year's South by Southwest performer contract. The section that he specifically shared appears to threaten that South by Southwest, the big Austin, Texas music and arts festival, would notify U.S. immigration if any performers from non-U.S. bands violated certain contractual rules. So this sort of became a viral thing and blew up and went all over the place, and everyone was sharing this or posting about this a few days ago. So performers and attendees were quick to express their displeasure with this particular section of the contract. South by Southwest CEO and co-founder Roland Swenson, he responded via a statement which read in part, "Language governing South by Southwest's ability to protect a showcase has been in the artist performance agreement for many years. It is, and always was, intended to be, a safeguard to provide South by Southwest with a means to respond to an act that does something truly egregious, such as disobeying our rules about pyrotechnics on stage, or starting a brawl in a club, or causing serious safety issues." So this was followed up by a couple longer statements. And in the longer statements that were released, they're, of course, drawing a parallel between all the fervor that's been kicked up by President Trump's travel bans, plural, and, you know, trying to say that this isn't South by Southwest trying to jump onto the, the wave of anti-immigrant sentiment. I don't know. And I don't know if this has been followed up since then, but there's a whole bunch of things we could talk about here with regards to this. John, you're the legal scholar in our midst. What do you think?
Well, actually, Adam, I'll mention the second half of the story. Well, actually, before we do that, I do think it was weird that South by Southwest had this clause. Like, they have lots of other clauses to protect them in case the artists don't abide by the contract. Mainly, it's like the first section of this, the first part of this section. Artists will be removed from their official showcase. Any hotels booked via South by Southwest will be canceled. Artist credentials will be canceled. I mean, that's heavy. That's a heavy enough hammer. So I don't know why they need to threaten people with deportation or notifying U.S. immigration or anything like that. Some people on Facebook and whatever were like, this is only if they're on a South by Southwest travel visa. So I don't know why people are mad about this. Not true. The way the face of the contract reads is, if you violate the South by Southwest contract, no matter who you are, if you're an immigrant, if you're a traveler, if you're a permanent resident, whoever you are, they can notify Department of Homeland Security and immigration authorities, which is an extremely heavy hammer and heavy-handed way to handle a breach of contract. I think what happened was, I think they just gave it to their lawyers, the contract. They said, make this as strong for us as we can, because we're South by Southwest, so we have a lot more bargaining leverage than Todd Slant or whatever. So they'll just sign whatever. So the lawyers are like, all right, we'll make this as tough as possible, as strong as possible. And lawyers rarely – actually, that's not true. But maybe not top lawyers don't think about the PR aspect, especially in something like this. So I think that's how this came about. What we haven't posted about yet, which we should have, is the Downtown Boys kind of started a petition that says, South by Southwest, you're a bunch of jerks. You need to change this. So South by Southwest said, okay, next year we'll make it less oppressive. And then Downtown Boys said, no, you need to make it less oppressive right now and remove the notification of travel authority and Homeland Security and immigration authority. You need to remove that completely right now. And South by Southwest, obviously due to the PR, negative PR pressure that we're getting, they removed that from this year's contract and claim they will no longer have that in next year's contract going forward.
See, I've got to imagine that a lot of there's probably a lot of stuff that's written into that South by Southwest agreement to try to keep I'm going to say bands in line, but that sounds a little bit off from what I'm trying to imply, because whenever there's one of these huge festivals, especially this one, which is one of the biggest, there's always side things that are happening. There's, you know, unofficial gigs. You're playing in a parking lot. You're going to go play at some show that happens to be, you know, featuring a bunch of bands from the festival, but it's not part of the festival technically, and all those types of things that start happening. And I would imagine there'd be a lot of like punitive language written into these contracts to try to stamp that kind of thing out. So that's when I first read the story. My impression was that, like, okay, what they're saying is that if you breach the South by Southwest contract, which is to say, if you go rogue and, you know, play some unofficial basement show that we haven't sanctioned. But then when you actually read a statement, he's like, oh yeah, pyrotechnics from stage. I'm like, oh, okay, shit. So really, it sounds like you're more talking about stuff that's illegal anyways. Like starting fights in clubs or anything like that. Like any of these like super egregious crimes, I don't exactly know why South By needs to spell out what their penalty is going to be for that. Because wouldn't there just be like actual legal penalties and things? Like, couldn't they just say like, don't break the law?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you breach the contract, they don't need to like have you bound and tortured. They just say, all right, listen, you're not playing South by Southwest. Get out of here. You know, and that's why I think it was probably just written by lawyers who weren't thinking about the PR aspect and were just making it as tough as possible.
That seems about right to me.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that this became suddenly a big thing now at all. I mean, to the people that object to this, and I'm not saying I don't object to it, I'm just saying this has been in here for a long time. I just find it interesting that now is the time that they're calling this out.
Well, actually, if I may interrupt, right now we live in the age of boilerplate contracts. And, you know, there's that South Park episode where everyone gets like an iPad and it means that Apple can like harvest your organs and stuff. So if anything, it shows that people are getting smarter with contracts and are fighting back against giant corporations and nefarious boilerplate contracts, which I think is good.
Right, but this isn't a new clause.
I'm saying it means people are getting smarter because corporations are getting deadlier and more dangerous. Like, so people are learning how to fight back, you know. And I mean, the point being, the idea behind large corporations is that supply dictates demand. And right. So the only reason why you're a huge company is because you're giving people what they want, so you're entitled to a lot of money. So people are saying, well, listen, you're not giving us what we want, so we're going to demand that you give us what we want. And so just goes to the consumer under that business model, if you will, is getting smarter. I mean, yeah, from this one tiny example out of all the millions of boilerplate contracts in 2017.
Right. And also, I do agree. I think, you know, lawyers are good. I mean, I'm not excluding you, John. Lawyers are good at what they do. They're good at law.
Well, excluding me?
I'm not done yet. Well, okay.
You just said lawyers are good at what they do, excluding you.
Okay. I wasn't done.
Adam, did you hear that? Said,
yeah, but it sounded like he was going to add a but. They constantly feed on the flesh of babies or something.
No, I actually work with... in my actual non-punk news position, I work with a decent amount of lawyers. And the one thing I've sort of begun to notice is that they are, like what John said, they are not good when it comes to PR. And they're also not good with just business sense in general, I'm noticing. So I happen to agree. I think this is pretty harsh relating to this. So I'm with John on that, definitely on that part. I'm surprised they didn't look it over to see after the lawyers wrote it. I guess the lawyers wrote the whole thing.
They probably did, but I mean, honestly, yeah. Usually with a legal contract, the client isn't. Companies often don't think of the PR angle, and that's why they have PR situations. If companies were always thinking of the PR angle, there would never be, you know, outrage, if you will. But
But companies hire PR firms for this type of thing.
Yeah, I don't know if they would have PR companies.
Lawyers don't. Lawyers just go, okay, here's what you need to do.
True.
And this will keep you rock solid. And you know, fine. They're going to go back to their big law firm and they'll rewrite it and probably, you know, keep about the same the same basic rules. They'll probably take some of the stuff out because it's bad for PR and bad for ticket sales and all that stuff. So I mean, that's it. This is a pretty open shut case about rage.
I imagine Ricky is in like drag neck. He's like, open and shut.
Yeah, this took like this could have been like a 5-minute thing. Like, I don't know. The internet.
So anyways, speaking of the border and why it should be fucked, Propagandhi are going back into the studio. They're going to be working on their next full length that's going to follow up 2012's Failed States, which I totally forgot was released on Epitaph of all labels. So yes. The band has gone and announced, where is this Instagram tweet thing that we put in here? Yes. So they started recording their drums and the guitars for the next record. That is all that they've announced. Of course, they're going to record those two things for the next record. So I don't know why I just read that to you. But anyways, they're posting some pictures on their Instagram where they're, demonstrating all the stuff and what's going on. So you should go check that out if you want to follow them. Given political climates and stuff, is probably going to be a big record for them.
I think it's going to be a big record for them for that reason, but also because this will probably be the first record with Sullen, the new guitarist. And also, I'm curious as to where they'll be. I know they had a bit of a thing going with Fat Records, but I wonder if they'll stay on Epitaph or not. I have friends that are absolute diehard fans of Propagandhi. I'm an occasional listener. I think they're cool. I'm definitely gonna check this out though. I think this could be I think this will be, I don't like using this word a lot, but this could be an epic record for just the scene in general, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to be important. I think that it was easier to ignore a band like Propagandhi, like during the Obama years when, stuff was mostly fine. So it's,
when did Failed States come out? 2012? Okay, that's a full term of Obama that they just skipped.
Well, yeah. And I've just got to imagine that, like, the mood is going to be more for a Propagandhi record than maybe it was. So, this is... I'm looking forward to this. I have iffy memories of Failed States, to tell you the truth. My era of Propagandhi that was my preferred was several records ago. So them being a full thrash band is a little bit less up my alley than, let's say, it once was. But I'm looking forward to this one again. I think I'm ready for it. I am. John, you got anything? Any Propagandhi thoughts?
You know me. I love.
I don't even know what that was going to be. So I'm just going to jump to the next story because this one is great. So there was a report in the LA Times and it involves, I can never pronounce, no, how is it drag or drage?
I think it's drag. I think it's drag-y, to tell you the truth.
No, I think it's drag. I think it's drag.
All right. Fletcher from Pennywise. He is not the best choice of person that you should try to carjack. So there was a suspect that was on the run from the police in a slow speed chase through a Redondo Beach neighborhood. Yeah, a few mornings. When was this?
About a week and a half ago,
right? So at the time, Fletcher was driving down the street in his Ford F-250 because, of course, he drives a Ford F-250. He's a big man. So when he saw the flashing lights of the police vehicles, he tried to pull his truck over, but he got caught on the median. At the same time, the suspect realized that he had a flat tire and stopped his vehicle. Then the suspect sort of ran over to Fletcher's truck, went to go in, took one look at the Pennywise guitarist in the eyes, and then changed his mind and left and decided that he did not want to try to confront a dude like Fletcher drag and truck jack him. So anyways, that happened. It's sort of hilarious because, like, Fletcher's a big boy.
Yes, he is.
I think it's hilarious that Fletcher's got this gigantic truck and he's trying to pull over, but he gets stuck. And then this guy runs over, like, I'm gonna steal his truck. He's like, holy shit. And then he just jumps in his truck and his car and speeds away.
Yeah, so I don't know. There's not really any debate on this one. It's just sort of great.
The only debate, people were saying, like, this is fake news. I'm like, this isn't fake. It was real. It was clearly real. But there's a bunch of people insisting that it wasn't real news, but it was real.
Like that it wasn't newsworthy or that it didn't happen.
That it didn't happen.
Why would that be made up?
I don't know. I don't know. Go to the Facebook of this, and there's people saying stop lying. This is not real. And not only was it true, you can watch the ABC helicopter video, and you can see Fletcher in the truck get stuck on the median and like look out his car at the guy who's while he speeds away.
Huh. Oh yeah, here. Okay, I just found the link to it. That's right. We should. We'll share the link when we actually share this this story. I didn't actually see this, so I want to see stuck on the median. I want to see what that means.
It means he doesn't know how to drive his truck. I mean, you know what a median is, right?
No, I know what that means. I can't. I had a hard time actually envisioning how this thing was going to work.
You should watch it. The video is great. The video is great.
All right, hold on. I have the sound off on the video. All right, there's a man in a truck. He is, or this little van thing. He's backing up. There's cops all around him. I don't know why he's driving backwards. That seems like the worst way to try to run away from anyone. Is that Fletcher there? Oh.
That's Fletcher's truck.
He looks like he was trying to... Oh, no, wait. This guy keeps going. Oh, okay. It's very quick. I have no idea how Fletcher's truck got into that position. Was he trying to like do a 3-point turn or something?
I just imagine Fletcher like, oh no, please, I better get in the median. Oh no, I'm caught in the median. I've got the giggles today, boys.
You're just cracking yourself up tonight.
So anyways, yeah, so that's, I don't know, that happened. That's kind of awesome. One more story before we get to really the biggest news of John for the year here. Mm. The fucked up Year of the Snake 12-inch, the one we talked about it on past episodes and how John bought the wrong record and everything. It is now online streaming. You can go listen to it. It's over at Noisy or something like that. We've got the link up on Punk News. You can find it in stores, or at least ordered or whatever, on March 24th when it comes out from Tank Crimes. So I have purposefully not listened to this. So did you, John? Are you satisfied?
I did. I mean, do you want me to talk about it, or do you want to keep it a complete surprise?
You know what? I'm pretty sure however you're going to describe it is not really going to ruin it for me, but I'm not going to go listen to it right now. I want to get the record and put it on and, you know, turn on some lava lamps or something. And yeah.
So you want me to describe it, or you don't want me to describe it?
I want me to describe your feelings. I don't need like a play-by-play.
My feelings are that it is another interesting step for effed up. It is not an unexpected step. However, it is effed up to excelling on the Zodiac series like they always do. I would say it's a very satisfying and even which one I'm looking for, or even a step that is advancing the band and suggests that effed up will be here for a long time. And that they will finish the Zodiac, and this release is another wonderfully weird, but not too weird release for the band that is thoroughly enjoyable and worthy of multiple plays, if you will. How about cool. That?
That works. I'm excited. Mine's in the mail.
If you're an effed up fan, you will if you like the Zodiacs, you will dig this.
That's what I was gonna say, because I tried, guys. I just got kind of bored. Not that I don't like the band, I just This is definitely a John and Adam thing.
John, we can hold hands.
I don't want to ruin because I was going to talk about the B side song, but I did. I don't want to ruin it for you, Adam. So
you
I'm
know
not,
me and Adam. We love the Theft Up Zodiac series.
Are you okay tonight? You're giggling. You got this metal voice that you keep dropping into.
I'm just in a good mood. I'm in a good mood.
That's nice. That's good. I know it's going to make you in a huge, ooh, like just a great, whatever it is.
Yeah, this is probably it.
This is why you're in such a good mood, isn't it? Do you it want is. The story or do you want the reaction?
I want the reaction. Adam, you read the story.
Dream Car. The new band, which features Davey Havoc of AFI and then everybody in No Doubt that isn't Gwen, have released their debut single. The song is called Kill for Candy, and it is from their debut album that comes out on May 12th. You can find the lyric video thing for the single over on Punk News right now, with other such media, including the recent picture of Dream Car from their tour announcements, which involves 80s lasers and things like that.
I'm pretty sure this was taken at my middle school photo day shot.
Yeah, and I don't know, Davey Havoc is dressed kind of like a matador.
Yeah.
Or like Gomez Adams. I'm not quite sure what's going on. Anyways, though, so Dream Car. We finally know what Dream Car sounds like. John, is this worth your excitement about Dream Car?
Well, I'm not thrilled about the 7 Dream Car tattoos I got now. But actually, I mean, honestly, I thought this was going to be terrible. This really wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to. I think people were expecting it to be so bad that no matter how it was, people were like, oh, this really isn't that bad. And it really isn't that bad. It is extremely 80s sounding, which is, anymore, if you ask me, is a good thing. You asked me 10 years ago, I said it's a terrible thing. But now you say it's a good thing. I think there are very heavy New Order tones. I think Tony Kanaal especially is borrowing. Tony Kanaal plays bass, not guitar, right? Or does he play guitar?
Wait, Tony is... Which one is he? Is he the one that dated Gwen?
Right. He's the bass player.
Okay,
right?
He plays bass.
Yeah. He really is taking a page out of the Peter Hook handbook, and I think that's cool. I think this track is almost exactly halfway between New Order and A-ha. Not a huge A-ha fan, but it's got a very heavy 80s vibe. I will say that I'm not a Davey fan at all. I think his singing actually here sounds so 80s, so A-ha-ish. It actually works. Except for, man, the horribly cliche and punny song lyrically just really annoys me. Like, he's got one line that's, miss you, misunderstand me. He's got another, me, I kill for candy. It just clunkers. The actual music and the actual singing is fine. Just the lyrics are clunkers. And honestly, it makes me a little sad that Gwen's not still in the band, because I think I would have loved to hear Gwen and the boys do a throwback 80s album. I think that would actually, no doubt's last album was kind of considered a faltering moment, if you will, because it was clear the band didn't really know where to go. And the answer is throwback 80s album. And I think this would have been a fantastic No Doubt album. But, you know, Gwen's off doing other things. And so this is what we're stuck with. Not as bad as I thought it was going to be. And actually somewhat respectable, just the lyrics are not that great.
When I heard, I mean, when we talked about them, like the rumors that they were getting together to form a band, I'm like, this could be interesting. I have an open mind. Then I heard the name of the band and thought that was garbage. And it's still a garbage name.
Pretty
I still
bad
think
name,
that
pretty bad name.
Really bad name, guys. Then I heard this and I got to tell you, I also had really, really low expectations for this. And it's a, like, yeah, I get it. It's an 80s throwback thing. I want to hear what the rest of the, I guess they're putting out an album. The debut album's coming out in May soon. So, I mean, I'll check it out for sure. But this didn't do anything for me. I'm just glad it wasn't. I think I'm at the point where I'm glad it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. So good job, guys.
So this sucks, and it sucks particularly because there are other bands right now that don't have the kind of like pop music pedigree that is in Dream Car, but are infinitely better. And it makes me crazy that a lot of people will hear Dream Car, but not a lot of people necessarily hear like any of the whole school of bands that are probably out there right now that are doing this well. So I'm going to play our next song by playing a band that is doing this sort of thing incredibly well. This is a band called Century Palm. It features members of Tough Age and of the Ketamines. And so they're, I guess that means they're probably based out of like Vancouver and Toronto at the same time. They have a record coming out called Meet You, M-E-E-T-Y-O-U, on Deranged Records in March or April, something like that, soon. This song is called King of John Street. It, just like Dream Car. has this indebtedness to Ian Curtis and to Joy Division and to New Order and all that stuff. But just from a song structure wise, the song King of John Street is just so infinitely more satisfying than anything that was on this other band's thing. Trigger. So I didn't say it. So you go, I mean, check this out. When you're specifically listening to this song, listen for when the chorus kicks in, because there's a really cool helky pop chorus on here, but it's not interspersed between verses of the song. It's at the end, and before that you kind of have this long droning section, and just like, I think it's a really interestingly structured song, and I keep listening to it on repeat because of that. So anyways, check this out. This is King of John Street by Century Palm. The shadow of the sea and tower was done in my day. I have the question whose idea was the people's old town play. Side of me and years, please forgive me, oh. Spending all my days in the east side, oh. We're back. John, you mentioned all your dream car tattoos.
Dream car.
I got a huge Constantine's tattoo on my arm.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about this, Adam. Adam White got his second tattoo. Same arm or different arm?
Same arm under the other one.
Are you going for a sleeve or something?
Yeah, I figure I'm going to work down the one arm and mostly concentrate on that arm for the foreseeable future. So yeah, I guess that means it's a sleeve. I mean, there's no intention of what the next puzzle piece or anything is. It's just that's where I'm working.
So I think Adam got a World War II fighter plane, right? Is that what you got?
No, it's actually much weirder than that. It is a Cessna Skylark. So it is like a 4-person little commuter plane that you would like fly out of a regional airport. You know, one of those little country airports with, I don't know who flies these things or where you go, but you know, one of those little puddle jumper kind of planes. And it is, there's a version of that plane that appears on the cover of the fourth Constantine's record, which is Kensington Heights, in which if you're just looking at the CD cover, all you see is like the black silhouette of the propeller of the plane. And then as you unfold the CD booklet, it unfolds into the full picture. But the one weird thing is that the one wing of the airplane is like 3 times longer than it should be. And if you're looking at it on the vinyl, they have like the whole plane on the cover. But then when you flip the book, the whole record cover over, the big long, abnormally long wing sort of extends all the way down the backside of it. So anyways, I always thought it was just like a weird image. And I liked the idea that if you saw it from an angle and then you start to see it from a different angle, like all of a sudden it's like what the fuck is wrong with that? Like, why is it, why is it off? Why is it askewed? And it's a Constantine statue, so that's really a no-brainer for me. So anyways, well,
what's the symbolism behind it, or nobody knows?
Not the symbolism for me, but like as far as like the for the band, there were stories prior to that record coming out that involved the Skylark, so I'm sure that was why it was in their head. And then they had the art people from Arts and Crafts that were doing the album cover incorporate that into the art. It was actually nominated for Juno up here for like best album art, one of those technical Grammy kind of things, the year it came out. I've just always thought it was just an incredibly cool looking thing. And, you know, one of the few, like pieces of visual symbolism that I can pick up off a Cons record, because they didn't have a lot of that kind of stuff. So yeah, I'm super happy with it. It looks cool. It is itchy as shit right now.
If I may play the part of Sigmund Freud, Adam, isn't it interesting how you have two tattoos and both are about flying through the air?
I know, but both have flying things.
But through impractical and impossible means. What does that mean? I wonder.
Yeah, I mean, you could read all sorts of maladies into the things that I've been doing to myself. So that's yeah. So, anyways, I've got that. I'm quite happy about it. The people I know that are huge Constantine's fans reacted in exactly the way that I wanted. So that makes it all worth it. My mom called me an asshole. that's how that turned out. Speaking of none of that, we're going to have a few more stories we're going to talk about this past week. The one, Punk Rock Bowling, the Las Vegas club shows were announced, and there are both a lot of them and some pretty interesting lineups that span like 35 years of music. So this is pretty neat. Do I go through the list? I guess I have to.
It's up to you. That's a long list, Adam.
It's a long list. I mean, so you should go to Punk News and take a look at it. I mean, I'll just point out a few things here to really nail down the range of stuff. There is a show that features Television. I didn't even know Television was still playing. And The Weirdos. There is a show that
Adam, if I may interrupt you, it's Weirdos with guests, and we don't know what that means, but a certain long-running hardcore hero who came back recently is a huge Weirdos fan and has shared members with the Weirdos. So I don't know who the guest would be, but that might be one of the guests.
Yeah. In the meantime, you have, you know, the Menzingers and the Lawrence Arms, Bad Cop, Bad Cop, Toys That Kill, you know, very, very, very Fat Wreck, Epitaph kind of show going on. And if you want to spike your hair up more, there's a show that features the Casualties and a Global Threat. If you want to get into the garage, there's, you know, Riverboat Gamblers playing with a reunion of the Soviets with Mean Jeans. You know, if you want to skank and dance around, you got Hepcat, the Slackers. There's tons more that are on this list. So, I mean, I didn't realize Television was still an active band.
And neither did I.
B, I'm kind of stoked that the Soviets are getting back together to play something. They were great. And C, a lot of these shows look amazing. I don't know what to say. Ricky, are you going out to this? This is in the universe, right?
As of right now, that's the plan. I mean, it'll probably sell out, but the one I really want to go to is the Menzingers Lawrence Arms one. I would absolutely love to see, I'm curious as to what the special guests one is. I think the Acoustic Night also looks pretty cool. You got Steve Soto, Brendan Kelly, and Off Their Heads, playing that. And I guess it's just Ryan and I guess, John from the band. But I would happily go to any of these because some of these bands I've never seen before, and I don't know if I would see them in if they were just out here in California. So I'm open to all of these, but the thing I want to do most is see the Menzingers and the Lawrence Arms at this point.
Well, I know who one of the special guests is.
Well, we can talk about that after if you want.
No, I'll tell you guys right now.
Dream Car. Yeah.
I mean, if I had the pick looking at one of these shows, I mean, I would, whew, it would be tough. I mean, I would want to see television out of curiosity. But I don't really have any idea who's even in television right now. Maybe is it the original guys or whatever? If so, maybe
it's probably just Tom Verlaine, right?
I would probably just go see Tom Verlaine, to tell you the truth. But yeah, hard to say. Hepcat and the Slackers, my God, that's my 1998, right? So I would, I would see that show in a heartbeat. But yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff going on here.
I actually. Television is almost all original members. Tom Verlaine, Billy Fika, and Fred Smith. The only guy that's not an original member is the guitarist, Jimmy Rip.
Huh. Good old Jimmy Rip. There you go. What do you know?
I'll tell you, man, what I would love to see television with the weirdos. Do people know who the weirdos are?
I've actually seen them before.
Were they cool?
Yeah, I saw them. God, it was such a weird, that was such a weird show. It was just a weird lineup because it was, who was it? Okay, so it was actually Bad Cop opening. The Weirdos and the Adolescents were headlining.
The Weirdos are commonly credited as being the first or second punk rock band in LA ever. And they're awesome.
They were cool.
If you haven't checked out the Weirdos, you should get their compilation. It's like Weird World Volume 1, which is basically all their music. Amazing band. No, yeah. Dream car, but you know.
I mean, hey, no, who is really? All right, so we're going to talk about a few more things that happened this past week. Ricky, you grab this one. This is your guy.
Yeah, sure. So CJ Ramone released his cover of Tom Waits' song "Pony" that will be on his upcoming album titled "American Beauty," which will be out the 17th of March, and it'll be out on Fat Records. The song features a horn section performed by members of Mariachi El Bronx. He also announced a big North American and European tours that will start in March. Big Eyes will be joining him for all the US and Canada shows. You can find the song on the Punk News article. I have a lot. I have a good amount to say, but I will throw it to you two. Adam, what'd you think of this?
I think it's really good. I mean, if for no other reason than Tom Waits songs are incredible templates for other artists to sort of take and make themselves sound amazing, which is not a slight to CJ or anything like that. You know, you hear anyone cover a Tom Waits song and it just totally comes to life in a different way. And if for no other reason than, you know, Tom personally is such like a weirdo iconoclast that sometimes that overshadows the fact that they're such just well put together songs. And go to the most obvious example of like Rod Stewart doing Downtown Train or something like that. But anyways, yeah. So this is cool. I'm down with this.
John, what about you?
Yeah, man, CJ's kind of killing it. I give CJ mad props because he's got one of the most difficult roads to hoe, if you will. Is he can either do strictly Ramon Styles tunes, and then he's not doing anything new. And not to diss on CJ, because no one could do anything. Like, he's never going to beat the Ramones doing the Ramones, you know what I mean? And so the other problem is, though, if he does something completely different, then why is he CJ Ramone, and why are we going to see him if he's doing something completely different? CJ Ramone is doing something that I did not expect him to do at all. He's juggling the Ramones angle, not in this song, mind you. He's juggling the Ramones side with the more, I guess you would say, more artistic, more unexpected style, and he's making them work together. Both some songs have both angles. Some songs are strictly Ramones type songs, and some songs are completely different, like this one. CJ Ramone really is playing his hand very carefully, I would say, but very skillfully, and finally he's kind of getting his due that maybe he didn't get in the Ramones as being, you know, the last Ramone, if you will.
So, right. So first of all, I loved it. I don't listen to Tom Waits a lot, but this, I really, really like this. What I can say about the new record is, because I've heard it already, is that if you're a CJ Ramones fan, I would say this might be his best record of the three. If you're just a general Ramones fan, you will not be disappointed. You'll be very happy. Now, to John's point about, one other thing. There's the song Tommy's Gone is beyond unexpected. It is so different to what he usually does, and lyrically beautiful, really well done. And just it just, if you are just a punk rock fan, it just rips your emotions out and just shows them to you. Like, it is the lyrics are just emotionally brutal. What I can so to John's point, if you watch, he did a small documentary on this when he was recording his first record, and he mentions that he wants to keep, it's his job to keep the Ramones sound alive and to keep, you know, he sees himself as carrying the torch. And so he stays to the Ramones style pretty conservatively on Reconquista's first record. Then when he did something like this on Pony, I was not surprised that he kind of ventured out a little bit, because that's kind of what he started to do on Last Chance to Dance. You could hear some surf, some heavy metal in there throughout the album. And like I mentioned recently, he did a Black Flag cover for his 7-inch as a B-side.
I gotta get that, man. I need to get that 7-inch.
It's good. I have one. I have it. It's neat. It's neat. And this time around, John, you're right. On this record, he kind of sticks around to both. He stays with just some of the Ramones stuff, and then he'll venture out. But he ventures out differently than where he does on Last Chance to Dance. So he keeps it interesting, and he keeps mixing stuff up, and it doesn't stray too far away. He's doing a really, really skilled balancing act on all the records, really. Now, one other thing I wanted to mention, and they did such a great, because they did such a great job with this, is did either of you see the picture of the vinyl?
It's red, white, and blue. That's cool.
It's like a red, white, and blue thing to match the cover. So this so far has been executed perfectly. I'm very happy with Pony. I'm happy with the last song he did. This is going to be a fun record. It is a fun record. That's what I can tell you. And I'll be reviewing it and probably saying almost the exact same thing in my review. So that's about it.
All right, well, we're going to talk about one more thing that we posted. This was an exclusive video that we put up from a band called Dollar Signs. I'd never heard of this. John, tell us about Dollar Signs here.
Yeah, the reason that I posted this video is because, well, the video is called, Punk on the Weekend, and it doesn't get much more org core than this. You guys, this is extremely org core.
This song actually very much reminds me of the band Pew Pew Pew. It's like a very like party punk, you know, we're going to sing about drinking and yeah.
And I usually boo-hoo that, but man, I thought this I thought the song was pretty good. I thought this video was friggin' hilarious.
Yeah.
Like I think the main, we got the main singer, Button, which the main singer's name is Button, something, but Eric Button, and like he's a singer of a band, but like as an actor, he's great in this video. In the video, he's basically doesn't want to get a 9-to-5 job, and a ghost or a zombie that represents 9-to-5 jobs like keeps appearing at random spots. And I just wanted to bring to mention this. I usually hate orgcore, if you will, but I thought this video was hilarious, and I think these guys are very talented at what they do. And I guess, if you will, I've had a minor epiphany that maybe not all orgcore is complete garbage.
It's not. Or I else say, it would.
I would consider this maybe a little bit more party punk than orgcore.
Oh, maybe then I'll retract my epiphany.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, no, this is super fun. There's a when the zombie guy or whatever you want to call him in the video first shows up, there's like a they live thing that they do, which was super funny to me. And yeah, I don't know, this whole thing was amusing. The video is super, super cool. You guys should go watch it.
I like the part, like there's a line in this song, they're like, I want to rock and roll all night, like they're like quoting Kiss, you know. I thought that was hilarious.
So anyways,
I thought it was very like Adult Swim humor. I don't know if you guys caught that.
To a degree, that one Adult Swim video where like it's like the opening to a TV show, but it goes on for like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Adult Swim is great. I do like Adult Swim.
I don't know.
What I love? I loved it.
Oh, John, this Anvil show broke you. All right,
I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
Ricky, play a song here.
Okay, so I've been told about this band for a while, and then I just wrote an article about it tonight, that they're going to be touring with Nightbirds in Australia late in the summer, and they're releasing a new album, I believe in May, through Pure... oh god, what was the... I think it's... Is it Pure City? Shit. Hang on a second. I forgot what the, oh, Poison City. Poison City Records. They're called Clowns. I've been told about this band for a little bit now, and I checked them out last week, and they were pretty cool. So I'm gonna play a song by them called These Veins off their 2015 release. Self-titled album, I guess. Oh no, it's called Bad Blood. Sorry, it's called Bad Blood. They're on Bandcamp and stuff. So here is These Veins by Clowns.
Back. That is it. We have blown through the stories we want to talk about this past week, and we're ready to go for next week. John, did you see Twitter today?
Did I see Twitter today? I did see Twitter today, yes.
Did you see all of the people telling me that my jukebox theory was top shelf brilliance?
I did, Adam. As I mentioned, I think you might have a grad school level or maybe even a doctoral level thesis there.
I don't at all recall what my point was. In particular, whatever point I was trying to make, I don't recall what the action step was. Like, you know, when you come to some realization, you want to go, okay, I have this knowledge, but now, and now I should do something with it. Like, with this knowledge in hand, I will now accomplish X. But I don't know. I'm not accomplishing fucking anything.
I think it had something to do with supply chain management, if I remember correctly.
It might be. Email podcast@punktunes.org if you want to email us. We'll see you guys next week.